Advanced English Examination. State Language Schools of Extremadura.
Task 1. News. Listen to 6 brief pieces of news on various subjects. Choose the correct option, A, B, C, for questions 1 to 6. Question 0 is an example, so you'll hear extract 1 only once. You will hear extracts 2 to 6, twice. You will have 30 seconds between the first and second listening and 60 seconds at the end. You now have 90 seconds to read the questions. Don't forget to write your answers on the answer sheet.
Extract 1.
Olga Tokarczuk, in an interview on the Nobel Prize website, says Polish is one of the best languages for expressing difficult things. After her novel Flights won both the Man Booker International Prize and Poland's most prestigious literary award, she was attacked by an army of trolls for her anti-nationalist writing, says her translator, Jennifer Croft.
People calling for her deportation, making rape threats and death threats, because they considered her a traitor to the Polish nation.
But Olga Tokarczuk's Polish fans have made her a bestseller at home. Tokarczuk is a fearless contrarian whose work includes a thriller promoting animal rights. The Nobel Prize in Literature has once again succeeded in shining a light on world authors. When it comes to avoiding controversy, well, there's always next year.
Extract 2.
Exactly 50 years ago, a popular TV program went off the air. It was sudden. It was mysterious. The strange disappearance of Dotto set off the famous quiz show scandals. As John McDonough explains, since then, the business of television has never been the same.
In the 1950s, a long silent struggle was going on deep inside television between the networks and the sponsors. At stake was who would control American television programming. The tipping point may well have come at 9 p.m. on this Tuesday night in 1958. On that evening, viewers expecting to see the popular NBC game show Dotto were surprised when, without any explanation, it wasn't there. Viewers of daytime television, where the show had been running daily on CBS, had had the same experience the day before. There was nothing unusual about a sagging show leaving the air, but Dotto's ratings were unusually high and its sponsor, Colgate, was presumably happy. There was something suspicious about this.
Extract 3.
We are getting a better picture of the inner workings of the terrorist group ISIS. That's thanks to a leak of thousands of digitized documents obtained by the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung. The British broadcaster Sky News also reports having similar data. The documents include information about the group's recruits from all over the world, including 800 from Germany. We talked to Süddeutsche Zeitung's foreign editor, Stefan Cornelius, earlier today. He didn't say exactly how the paper got the huge file, but he described its contents.
The documents list up fighters, volunteers who come into Syria from abroad to sign up to fight with ISIS. And they then take stock of those people. They want to know names, addresses, home phone numbers, relatives, blood types, expertises, like whether you want to be a chemical specialist or whether you can drive a car. They ask those people whether they want to act as a suicide bomber or as an attack person or as a bureaucrat in the headquarters of ISIS. It's like a regular personnel file we all know from an ordinary company.
Extract 4.
When she was 5 years old, De Leon de Vega began playing piano. By then, the family had moved to the Echo Park neighborhood of Los Angeles. She recently went back to her old elementary school to talk to the kids about music.
I played in the schoolyard and walked these halls, and it was always, even at that age, I had a really strong feeling to one day come back. And I thought, I will never forget what this is like, being a child.
As a little girl, she says, music was her refuge.
I was definitely, you know, the nerd and the person that the bullies would pick on. I was actually beat up numerous times in this school. And I was very shy. I was very quiet. I just wanted to go back home. You know, and I think music saved me.
She eventually became a piano major at California State University, Los Angeles, where one of her professors encouraged her to take up the baton. But a well-known conductor she doesn't want to name told her to quit.
He said, "A woman will never be allowed to conduct a symphony orchestra on stage in our lifetime. That will never, ever exist." Of course, I couldn't believe that. It just discouraged me for about a minute, and that was it.
De Leon de Vega began guest conducting. She invited her father to go with her on one gig to Rome to fulfill his last wish to visit the tomb of Santa Cecilia. After he died of cancer a few weeks later, she started putting together her orchestra.
He always prayed to Saint Cecilia before he sang. And in his honor, I named it after the patron saint of music. And she was Roman, so the name is Cecilia. And we have a Spanish name too, Orquesta Santa Cecilia.
Extract 5.
That's the way the architect writers work. They plan the novels out in advance. What's going to be everywhere? Every turn, every twist, everything. They have these very detailed outlines. And then there are the gardeners who dig a hole and they plant a seed and they water it, in the case of writers, with their blood and their tears and their sweat. And they hope that something comes up. And they have a general idea. They know whether they planted an acorn or a tomato plant. But there's lots of surprises. Sometimes it doesn't come up at all. Or it comes up and dies. And sometimes it gets very wild. And that's me. I'm much more a gardener than an architect. In that way, I'm like J.R. Tolkien and others. So it's not the most efficient method of writing. Frequently, the characters are mischievous sons of bitches, and they leave me down some garden path, and I suddenly realize I'm at a dead end. But it's worked for me all my life, so I'm probably going to keep continuing doing it that way.
Extract 6.
The facts don't always relieve our anxieties, though. Sometimes they only harden our views. Some time ago, Tally did a study where she presented information to people who believe that climate change is real and to people who are skeptics. She found, for both groups, people strengthened their pre-existing beliefs when new information confirmed what they thought, but both groups ignored information when it challenged their views. I asked Tally about this.
Our psychological biases are the same across individuals on average. We all have what's known as a confirmation bias. A confirmation bias is our tendency to take in any kind of data that confirms our prior convictions and to disregard data that does not conform to what we already believe. And when we see data that doesn't conform to what we believe, what we do is we try to distance ourselves from it. We say, well, that data is not credible, right? It's not good evidence for what it's saying. So we're trying to reframe it, to discredit it.
Now, listen again.
Extract 2.
Exactly 50 years ago, a popular TV program went off the air. It was sudden, It was mysterious. The strange disappearance of Dotto set off the famous quiz show scandals. As John McDonough explains, since then, the business of television has never been the same.
In the 1950s, a long silent struggle was going on deep inside television between the networks and the sponsors. At stake was who would control American television programming. The tipping point may well have come at 9 p.m. on this Tuesday night in 1958. On that evening, viewers expecting to see the popular NBC game show Dotto were surprised when, without any explanation, it wasn't there. Viewers of daytime television, where the show had been running daily on CBS, had had the same experience the day before. There was nothing unusual about a sagging show leaving the air, but Dotto's ratings were unusually high and its sponsor, Colgate, was presumably happy. There was something suspicious about this.
Extract 3.
We are getting a better picture of the inner workings of the terrorist group ISIS. That's thanks to a leak of thousands of digitized documents obtained by the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung. The British broadcaster Sky News also reports having similar data. The documents include information about the group's recruits from all over the world, including 800 from Germany. We talked to Süddeutsche Zeitung's foreign editor, Stefan Cornelius, earlier today. He didn't say exactly how the paper got the huge file, but he described its contents.
The documents list up fighters, volunteers who come into Syria from abroad to sign up to fight with ISIS. And they then take stock of those people. They want to know names, addresses, home phone numbers, relatives, blood types, expertises, like whether you want to be a chemical specialist or whether you can drive a car. They ask those people whether they want to act as a suicide bomber or as an attack person or as a bureaucrat in the headquarters of ISIS. It's like a regular personnel file we all know from an ordinary company.
Extract 4.
When she was 5 years old, De Leon de Vega began playing piano. By then, the family had moved to the Echo Park neighborhood of Los Angeles. She recently went back to her old elementary school to talk to the kids about music.
I played in the schoolyard and walked these halls, and it was always, even at that age, I had a really strong feeling to one day come back. And I thought, I will never forget what this is like, being a child.
As a little girl, she says, music was her refuge.
I was definitely, you know, the nerd and the person that the bullies would pick on. I was actually beat up numerous times in this school, and I was very shy. I was very quiet. I just wanted to go back home, you know, and I think music saved me.
She eventually became a piano major at California State University, Los Angeles, where one of her professors encouraged her to take up the baton. But a well-known conductor she doesn't want to name told her to quit.
He said, "A woman will never be allowed to conduct a symphony orchestra on stage in our lifetime. That will never, ever exist." Of course, I couldn't believe that. It just discouraged me for about a minute, and that was it.
De Leon de Vega began guest conducting. She invited her father to go with her on one gig to Rome to fulfill his last wish to visit the tomb of Santa Cecilia. After he died of cancer a few weeks later, she started putting together her orchestra.
He always prayed to Saint Cecilia before he sang, and in his honor, I named it after the patron saint of music. And she was Roman, so the name is Cecilia. And we have a Spanish name too, Orquesta Santa Cecilia.
Extract 5.
That's the way the architect writers work. They plan the novels out in advance. What's going to be everywhere? Every turn, every twist, everything. They have these very detailed outlines. And then there are the gardeners who dig a hole and they plant a seed and they water it, in the case of writers, with their blood and their tears and their sweat. And they hope that something comes up. And they have a general idea. They know whether they planted an acorn or a tomato plant. But there's lots of surprises. Sometimes it doesn't come up at all. Or it comes up and dies. And sometimes it gets very wild. And that's me. I'm much more a gardener than an architect. In that way, I'm like J.R. Tolkien and others. So it's not the most efficient method of writing. Frequently, the characters are mischievous sons of bitches, and they leave me down some garden path, and I suddenly realize I'm at a dead end. But it's worked for me all my life, so I'm probably going to keep continuing doing it that way.
Extract 6.
The facts don't always relieve our anxieties, though. Sometimes they only harden our views. Some time ago, Tally did a study where she presented information to people who believe that climate change is real and to people who are skeptics. She found, for both groups, people strengthened their pre-existing beliefs when new information confirmed what they thought, but both groups ignored information when it challenged their views. I asked Tally about this.
Our psychological biases are the same across individuals on average. We all have what's known as a confirmation bias. A confirmation bias is our tendency to take in any kind of data that confirms our prior convictions and to disregard data that does not conform to what we already believe. And when we see data that doesn't conform to what we believe, what we do is we try to distance ourselves from it. We say, well, that data is not credible, right? It's not good evidence for what it's saying. So we're trying to reframe it, to discredit it.
This is the end of listening one.